Hello and welcome to Motopod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 592. I'm Skyler Vicori, and joining me today is none other than Derek Cabrera. Derek, how's it going, man?
It is going pretty well. How about yourself, Skyler?
You know, it's good. I'm busy over here, but it's a very good kind of busy. I've been, you know, back to school again. This semester's much, much easier. My classes are quite enjoyable. I just found out last week that I got into San Jose State University, which was the university I was trying to get into. So I start there this fall. So I'm pumped.
Nice, man.
Yeah, thanks. I'm pumped about that.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And me and the wife booked our trip for our honeymoon. We're going to be going to Italy and Greece for 3 weeks this summer. So if any of you motor potters out there in Italy could throw me any tips, it will be appreciated. I've been doing a ton of research, but man, I just 3 weeks seems like a lot of time. And then I do all this planning. And it really isn't, Derek. It really isn't enough time. But I will make you jealous. I am going to go to the Ducati factory.
Ooh, you will be making me jealous. That sounds incredibly exciting. I'm also planning my European vacation to England this summer. So, you know, we'll be able to see some stuff and, yeah, it'll be good.
Excellent. Do you know where you're going? Whenabouts?
I'm going in the middle of October. I bought the flight tickets the other day and I forget the dates already, but, did I say October? I meant August, middle of August.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Because I'm going to be there from about the 10th of June until the 4th of July. That's when I'm going to be there. So we'll be trading off. I guess they have a limit for how many American motopodders they can have over there at one time, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
All right, so for those of you that are new for the show, first and foremost, thank you for joining us here. We do the show. We try to do it once a week, if not more. We try to do it after racing, but we have a little different format than we used to have. We're breaking it up. A lot of you saw this last year where we're going to be kind of like specializing. So far this year, what I have is laid out, myself and Jim are going to be taking over, kind of doing MotoGP like we did before. Myself and Derek are going to be talking World Superbike mainly and probably Moto America. And then we'll be using some combination that one of us can't fill in, Jim and Derek, you know, that kind of thing without me. Andrew and Dave. Dave is going to be joining us even more this year. They're going to be really digging into not only BSB, but the real road stuff and exposing that a lot more to our audiences. That's going to be great. So what you might see this year, what's different from last year, is you might see multiple shows per week. We figured, let's stop doing the three-hour cover all shows and let's get, you know, let's put up maybe two shows if we want a week, or maybe three shows if we want to, and you can kind of pick and choose what you want to listen to. Maybe you have a high interest in BSB, you don't really care about Moto America, and vice versa. You can get out there and see that. So we're going to be trying that this year, and tell us what you think. Do you like it? Do you not like it? Send us in. And remember, you can always contact us at motopod@motopodcast.com. We get all of your news and mail there. Just go ahead and send it in to us. We'll go ahead and give it a read. One of the hosts will more than likely get back to you in a timely manner. And if it's something that we want to bring up on the show, we'll definitely get on here and talk about it. Speaking of the show, want to give a big shout out to all of our recent donators and subscribers, Andy Miller, David Johnson, Gary Chavit, Jermon Melvit. Please write us in if I did not get that right, or anyone if I did not get your name right. Lester Ng, Peter Newell, Steve, Warren Pond, our subscribers Keith Kovac, Alan Fleming, James D. Pretorio, Nick Saban, and Scott Saunter. Thank you all so very, very much. And folks, remember, if you want to become a donator or subscriber, just head over to our page. That's motopod@motopodcast.com. On the left-hand side, you'll see the two PayPal blue buttons. You can do a one-time donation, or, like you just heard several lovely people there on the show, you can become a subscriber for however as little or however as much you would like per month, per week, however you want to donate. It's all up to you. We appreciate all the donations. It keeps us getting out to the races. It keeps us getting these interviews for you guys and keeping this show up and running. So thank you very much to you listeners. We do it all for you. If PayPal is not your sort of thing, you can always head over to patreon.com/motopod. It's another source you can go over there to donate. We're still growing that whole process out. It may look something more like what you're used to, where there's prizes involved and so on and so forth for different levels of donators, but that's for something maybe a little further down the road. But once again, just a big thank you to all you donators. Derek, now there was a little bit of news. I think, honestly, the testing is probably the news for the most part. But I did want to talk about what MotoGP implemented or is going to be implementing this year is the penalty lap. So the penalty lap, for those of you that don't know, is instead of doing the, let's say when a rider cuts a chicane, they would give them a 3 to 4 second penalty, or they would have to give the place back to the rider if they got in a competitive advantage. That is no longer. As we've seen sometimes during a race, if they're in a pack, you say, hey, give up the position. Sometimes that position has already gone and changed hands 3 or 4 times, and they're turning around looking like, oh, I don't know what I did. Or in worst case is that you cut the chicane and the penalty was you had to give the spot up. Well, the next guy behind you, he's 10 seconds back on the road and you've got to give up the spot. It gets a bit ridiculous. So they're going to try and improve that what's called this penalty lap. They're going to choose a section on the track that has a corner that isn't being used for the race. It's going to be a little bit longer, and they're going to have to go out there and probably go around some kind of barrier or some kind of chicane, which is going to penalize them 3 to 4 seconds. What this will do is this will keep them on the track and keep kind of the you know, having to get out of the way of somebody or rolling off the gas, taking that aspect out and possibly making it a little bit safer. I did see some of the riders were saying it obviously it got approved by the riders, but some of them were concerned about being on the dirty part of the track, getting dirt on your tires, coming back on and not having the grip, so on and so forth. I guess you can kind of see that as part of the penalty. What do you think about that, Derek?
Yeah, I think in theory, it sounds like a much better idea, especially in the case, which I feel like comes up very often, is that a rider needs to give up a position and the next rider is like 10 seconds back. Or the next rider's 10 seconds back with a group of like 5 riders. So if you give up one position, you're going to give up 5 positions. So I think in that case, it makes it way better for the riders and ultimately safer. I'm interested to see how they're going to implement this on every single track, because I don't know if every track is going to have as nice of a runoff as the corner that they're doing it at Qatar. I've seen a couple photos of it. And it's like the most ideal corner to have like a longer loop around in that extra runoff. To fix the problem that it's trying to fix is a very good idea, but we'll see how practical it is in every track. And also there has to be some concern about, one, it being on the dirty part of the track, and two, rejoining the track if it's in a, you know, if they're rejoining in a battle. So yeah, I don't know. That's going to be interesting, and to see how quickly they can go through that. Is there going to be a speed limit in that area? Do you know?
I don't know. There may be a discussion of that. I didn't pick up any of that through the reading if there was going to be a speed limit. That's probably something that they're going to have to consider, because the first time someone goes flying in there and slams the brakes and goes crashing through it, they're going to have to realize, maybe that wasn't the best, but... These are pros. They're going to figure it out.
Like, especially like Marquez or Iannone, like if they're trying to make up time and they're trying to go as fast as possible around this like larger part of the track, it's dirtier. It's obviously going to be far less runoff because it's off of the actual racetrack. So I don't know. That's probably a concern, like a speed limit in that area, or how close to actual walls that ends up being if they're going in hot, you know. So that's going to be interesting to see how that develops, but at the end of the day, I think they're going in the right direction, and like you said, obviously, you know, has to go through the riders and the rider safety commission, so obviously that got approved to a degree. So we'll see how it is. I mean, you know, who knows the first race when we're actually going to see this need to be into play. Do you know if they're also going to do it for the lower classes, like Moto3 especially?
I would assume that is going to be the case, but I think right now they're in such the early testing phase. They want to get, you know, they want to try it out with the most experienced riders before they go and throw another curveball at the maniac class that is Moto3.
For sure. I feel like that's where you would see penalties like that every weekend, you know, because they're always talking about exceeding track limits on those bikes. Mm-hmm. I really like the concept. I'm super interested to see how it's going to work in practice. A little unsure, but so is probably everyone until they have to do it.
Well, Derek, I got good news for you. That's only a couple days away.
Oh, yes, it is. 4 days from when we're recording this, in fact.
Exactly. And, you know, I it feels like the last two weeks here have taken forever. Winter went by quick, but the anticipation has gotten real. Seeing the guys get on track and actually testing and seeing everybody in the new colors has really gotten the juices going.
Yeah, man, it's exciting. We can actually talk about an actual race that took place a couple weeks ago now at this point, which was the first World Superbike race.
And it was good to have it back. We got some new faces and some people, old faces in new places. I was supposed to deliver that a lot smoother, Derek. But, you know, sometimes when you're trying to be cool and think of stuff on the fly, it just comes out of your mouth as a bunch of garbage. So,
I knew what you meant. You got there. You got there in the end.
Now, I have a question for you because I didn't actually get a chance to catch it. I wasn't being the greatest Motopod host, but it looks like they've changed the Super Pole format, or they've just condensed Super Pole down into one session, but they still have knockout rounds?
They don't have knockout rounds. It's literally just a qualifying session. It's a 25-minute qualifying session, which they call Super Pole, which is now not Super Pole and just qualifying. But it makes sense because there's only 18 riders and they have the Super Pole race, which adds, effectively it takes up another session, takes up more track time. So I get it. And especially for the smaller grid, it works because World Superbike is stacked now. Like you look down the entire entry list and maybe Chinari and Del Bianco are like the two ones that you look at with some question, but everyone else on the grid is like A class riders,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely, it's gotten actually so competitive. There's a lot of guys that deserve to be there that couldn't get a ride. Your Chavi Forrest's and stuff like that, who should have been there. We got into Super Bowl here, and after testing, we kind of knew who was going to be out, because if a lot of you remember, testing is about a week and a half prior to this at the same track. So just like Qatar gets its test in 2 weeks before its first race in MotoGP, they do the same thing with the Superbikes. Johnny Rae got the pole, but just barely. He got it by 0.2 over his teammate Leon Haslam, and another 0.1 back would be Álvaro Bautista, who's new on the new Ducati, and the Ducati was looking strong. There were quite concerns, which we find out would be validated, that the bike was going to be a lot more powerful and better than people actually thought from testing. They may have been sandbagging or holding back. What was good to see is Tom Sykes. He was in fourth. That's on the brand new BMW effort on the brand new S1000R. And then just behind him was Alex Lowe's on the Yamaha, followed by Sandro Cortese on the GRT's World Superbike debut, the former World Supersport team. And then Vandermark just behind him, Rinaldi, Melandri, and Camier to close out your top 10. And Derek, let's just get on to racing. We've got lots to cover, so let's jump into race one. At the beginning of the race, Johnny Rae out to a good start and was kind of duking it up with his teammate. And then Haslam went out there and dropped the bike. And then Bautista dropped the hammer, dude. I mean, Bautista, we know he's a good rider. Obviously, last year when he got the ride, Lorenzo's bike went up there and he got a top five, finish in MotoGP. But, let's be real. Yes, he's good enough to beat Johnny Rae, but by 14 seconds.
Yeah.
Let's remember, the Kawasaki is penalized by about 2,000 RPM right now, and the Ducati is not. And I think after this weekend, the Ducati is going to be earning some choke down on its engine.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they do the rev limit thing. I feel like that whole rule is really difficult to understand until the week, because it's arbitrary, right? They can just put rev limits. Technically, I think ideally it's every three races they'll evaluate it, but I think after a performance like this, they can technically do something in Thailand. But yeah, 14 seconds. Especially with Thailand, it has those two, three long straights.
Yeah.
So, that's another worrying track. But, Johnny Rae's always said that Phillip Island is kind of like a bogey circuit for him. And, look at last year, Melandri did the double. And between the power of that bike and how comfortable Bautista seems here, it was incredibly impressive.
Yeah, and he was saying he was saving tires. That's like, you were saving tires and pulling away? Ooh, that was definitely a shot to the rest of the field there. It's like, hey, we're here, we're coming this year. Like, we're going to be strong. If yes, the bike is fast, but Bautista is a very good rider. And you can back that up, because if you really want to look at the next Ducati down, that you had to go all the way down 9th place. And that was Michael Rubin Rinaldi on the Barney Racing team. It wasn't even his teammate. Chaz Davies was buying him in 10th, and Chaz had a weird weekend. I think he's still recovering from injury or something, because he was never in the fight at all whatsoever.
He said physically he's fine, but I don't believe that. I don't believe that Chaz was so far down all weekend, because where did he qualify? He qualified in 16th place, and then in race one, he was 10th. So, yeah, I can't believe that he's fully fit, and that Bautista is just that much better of a rider. You know, I don't think that's the case. But it is interesting, too, because, you know, you have all these guys coming from the Ducati twin to the V4, while you have Bautista coming from the V4, Desmosedici, to the V4 Superbike. So arguably, it's a less of a transition for him, you know?
This is true. The power delivery might be much more keen to the GP bike than it was to the old 1098s or Panigale.
So that's one thing to think of. Another thing to think of, I guess, is that, you know, Bautista was here, what, 3 months ago? You know, he did a whole race weekend. He was on the factory Ducati. You know, I don't know if that's that much of a factor, but it's something to think about, I guess, because, like, once all these guys get on the track, like, after a session, they're all up to speed.
Pretty much.
But, yeah, you know, I think he made the package work for him, you know, and I'm excited to see. I feel like it's not going to be really till Assen, because we have Thailand coming up. We got those three super long straights, and then after that, the first European rounds in Aragon, and it has that super long back straight. So unless they do something with the rev limits, I think we're not going to know until like the first 3-4 races if this Ducati is going to really be competitive.
Yeah, and if it's blasting, you know, if they do take 3 races before they make any adjustments, I mean, it could be a big hole for anybody else to climb out of, because, I mean, the way that bike looks, it wouldn't be impossible to see him sweeping the first 3 rounds and taking not only the 2 races but every Super Bowl race too. But the Super Bowl race, man, that, you know, I didn't know how I was going to feel about this year.
I wasn't feeling good about it, but it...
It's amazing. You know what? I'm almost down. Let's cut some laps off the other races. Screw it. Let's make 3 12-lap races at this point. It was fantastic.
I know. I was really skeptical. I was like, you know, it just seemed weird. You know, like, why are we doing the sprint race? But man, the racing in it, the fight that Johnny gave Bautista, and then in all races, but especially the Super Bowl race, the way they were going into Stoner Corner, and they were just lighting the tires up, and they were making overtakes through that corner. It was crazy.
Dude, it was good. Johnny Ray was sideways about every single corner, and, you know, that's what I'm saying. People were questioning his riding skill versus when Bautista, the GP boys showed up, and, you know, he showed them the door. Go watch the breaking into turn one. Like, that's all I got to say. If you really want to see, it's like, no, it's not the skill, boys. Like, Johnny Ray was burying it in there on the brakes a good, some, like, 30 yards after Bautista at some points. It was insane. I was like, oh. But that was because he had to keep him behind. He wasn't going to give him a straightaway. So every time he'd come up and just hold it just in the draft enough and then just grab the brakes that much later, fling them into the corner, and then get it sideways out of the corner so he couldn't come back underneath him. Then Bautista would squeeze him on the second part of turn two, going into three. It's like, oh. Every single lap was like that until they burnt the tires up. I think by about lap 8, I think that's when it kind of was like, all right, that's enough of that. And they kind of rolled it back and everyone settled down. But even behind them, it was going off.
But even then, like, you know, 10 laps, don't have to worry about the tire. Yeah, you're right. The tire probably went around lap 8. But with that said, you know, Ray only finished a second behind Bautista over 10 laps as opposed to 14 seconds. Over what was the race distance for the other one? 25 some odd laps?
Yeah, something like that. I think it's 26, right? 25, 26.
Yeah. So, I mean, that just goes to show, like, Ray can obviously, you know, he's obviously going to be there with Bautista this year. And I think it was mainly just the track this time out. But, that Super Bowl race really just highlighted how competitive and just how good the racing can be in World Superbike. So that's now, exciting. I'm excited to see this for the rest of the year.
Exactly. And they use this race to go ahead and grid up the second race too, because, you know, remember, you know, they finished the first race and they swap everybody around. It was all kind of that confusing thing when first goes to seventh and third goes to ninth, and then everything else moves up. It's like, okay, that's kind of strange. And they're doing, but they're doing the same thing. We're only taking the top nine. So anybody that qualified outside of that top nine has a chance to get in there, and that moves them up the grid. Well, but if you don't, I think you go back to your original starting position from the previous qualifying. And man, Davies missed out just again, finishing in 10th behind Laverty. And Laverty is running on the, you know, another non-factory Ducati. That's Rinaldi and Laverty, both on privateer Ducatis beating a factory Ducati, Chad Davies. I personally, like we just discussed, there's no way Chaz is, something is up. I can't see him having, being spouted back that far, especially when the bike looks that good.
I don't know. Something has to be weird. The bike did look really good, but there were some times it looked loose, like coming onto that front straight out of that final corner, when, mm-hmm. especially in that Super Pole race with Ray and Bautista when they were so close together. I just remember seeing the back just wobble every time coming out of the start of that corner onto the front straight. And, you know, it was definitely, it wasn't as in line, but I feel like the Ducatis never are, right? It always looks like they're fighting the bike.
Exactly, all that torque. I will tell you this, though, Derek, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the Honda, it's still ass. I'm just saying, that bike sucks.
Yeah, man. After, you know, a lot of buildup, HRC's coming in to take over the project, and still they haven't really got it down right.
No, it's, you know, Cameron is right there back 13th and 14th in the Super Bowl race. Where'd they finish in the first race? Let's take a quick jump back. I think Cameron didn't even finish the first race, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he crashed out.
Crash. Yeah, probably trying to push that thing. Chiari finished second to last and 16th. I obviously that's a passport seat, so we're not going to, you know, get on that too much. It's whatever, you know. I understand, but then, you know, Honda, we'll see if maybe they come out with something a little more. If this is more Rocky and HRC's best effort, though, I mean, just save your money and put it in GP at that point.
Yeah, it's like you have that. You have the disparity between the V4R, which is, you know, arguably like the most powerful homologation special superbike of all time. Then you have the Honda SP2, I think it is. That's maybe not even cranking out 200 horsepower stock. So God only knows what they can do with that, you know, with the superbike trim. But still, it's nowhere near enough. Even just power wise, let alone chassis, let alone, you know, all electronic developments. So, you know, I'm hoping it gets better. Ideally, I'm hoping Honda comes out with a better superbike, but that's not up to the team. So, yeah, I don't know. It's going to be a while. It's going to be another long season for Camier, I think, unfortunately. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, it just bums me out that Camier, you know, he needs to be on a better bike. I think that guy's got talents to be at the front, no doubt. Just hasn't really ever been on the equipment to take him there. But we'll see, maybe in the near future, because he's still a pretty relatively young guy. He's an old racer, young guy, kind of thing, yeah. Right? But I think he's definitely got a chance to still snag one of the better factory. I mean, maybe Yamaha. I mean, the Yamaha boys were looking okay this week, but you can't go out in your first race and lose to the privateer team in the first race out with Merlandri. Like, I know it's Marco Merlandri, but you're the factory Yamaha team, and you lost the first race to a privateer team which just stepped up this year. That's not the best look, I don't think.
It's not, but from what I understand, they do have pretty equivalent equipment, right? So like the factory team has to make available everything that they have to privateer teams, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that is something they implemented a couple years ago.
Yes. Yeah. So you know, you get a really good team together like GRT and a rider like Marco Melandri, and obviously he does well at Phillip Island. You know, I think that shows just how competitive the Yamaha package can be, because obviously that team hasn't done a ton of development work on that bike. But you know, that baseline probably isn't exactly where the Kawasaki and the Ducati looks to be right now. So, I don't think that's new news, but it's interesting because even Cortese was competitive.
True. And that reminds me of, I remember I was talking to one of my buddies, and they said they just need to, you know, because the gap between the Kawasaki and the Ducati, said, oh, they just need to take the penalties off the Kawasaki. No. You see how the Yamahas and the Kawasaki and everybody else is duking it out. You got to bring the Kawasaki back with everybody else, because if you turn it off, all of a sudden turns into Moto America. Then it's just two teams running away with everything, and then everyone else is back there. Like, we've already done that dance at World Superbike before. Let's reel in that Ducati, and like, let's battle out. And it's like, you know, I think the penalty thing can work. I think it's definitely going to take quite a bit of time to learn how to massage that, and when, more importantly, when to give it back to teams, because obviously, teams are never going to stop putting money to get that last tenth out of their bike. So you got to, you know, it's give and take. But you also run into the issue with who's making that decision. You don't want it to wind up like F1, where it always looks like they're helping out Ferrari, right? You don't want it to look like that, where it's like you're always, you know, penalizing one team and helping the other. So it's going to be a tricky thing to see.
That's the thing. Like, I'm all for, you know, trying to make the grid more equivalent and a little bit closer together, but with a rule so ambiguous as the rev limit rule seems to be, it's especially as a fan, you know, maybe inside the paddock it's makes a little bit more sense, but from everything that I'm reading and seeing, it's just like a very ambiguous, like, you know, every couple races we'll go through and we'll see what we do, you know. It makes it kind of difficult. So I'm all, yeah, like you said, all for, you know, the equaling things out, but you can't penalize the teams for doing well.
No. And then that gets us into our second race. Bautista, I think, at one point was 17 seconds ahead and rolled off so he can throw up the deuces as he crossed the finish line. And then, so Johnny Ray only finished 12 seconds back at the time. His teammate Leon Haslam did finish the race's time there in third, completing the podium. And then you kind of went the Yamaha streak. Vandermark, Lozer, and Landry, which all had a great battle for that position. Those guys were duking it out. And then Chaz Davies, you know, cracking the top 10 on this race, getting in the seventh place. Cortese in eighth. Laverty, you know, pretty good showing for that team as well. They're ninth in front of Leon Cameron and the Honda. And then Sykes didn't have the greatest race. He had a pretty good race in the first one, but finishing back then 13th, and then right behind Marcus Ryderberger. So obviously that BMW has definitely got some work to do. But I will tell you this, I was surprised. I thought because of, you know, BMW's history that they were going to come out and do kind of a similar thing at this race that Ducati did and have a bullet of a bike in a straight line, but not so great in the corners. And they were definitely down on power because they were getting yanked on the front straightaway just about everybody except for maybe the Honda.
Yeah, it sounded like they had the exact opposite problem. They were amazing through corners, and down the straight, they were, you know, 10 kilometers an hour down is what I heard. So, yeah, they got to do some engine development. Seems like they might have something in the European rounds to make it a little bit more competitive, but anytime you add power, it unsettles the chassis, so hopefully it doesn't unsettle it too much that it's going to be, you know, they'll have that straight line speed, but won't be able to get around corners. So we'll see. But I think overall for a brand new bike, that's kind of flown under the radar. Like it hasn't, but it's no V4R, right?
Right.
I think they had a pretty respectable weekend, especially using a bone stock, engine. So, yeah, solid shown by Sykes. One persons I did want to talk about quickly is Leon Haslam. I think he had a fantastic weekend. Absolutely fantastic. Really was fighting for the podium, second place in every race. Unfortunately, he crashed out of the first one. But even then, like the racing that he had with Johnny through all three races is what you want to see. There were battles in that pack, and Haslam was making Ray work for his positions in all those races. So I was excited to see that, and hopefully he can be closer to Ray this year than Sykes was to Ray last year.
We're going to see if that can continue on. I mean, Haslam, I think the only thing that's really held him back for a lot of his career is the injury bug a little bit. If he can keep it up on, you know, rubber side down, we're going to see a lot of good things out of him. He's going to be a much stronger teammate than I include myself and many other people, I think, thought he was going to be this year. It's good to always be proven wrong to see riders get up there. That takes us to our championship, Derek. It's pretty easy to figure this one out for the first two spots, at least. Bautista leading it off with 60 points. Johnny Ray, he's back by 11 points there in second place. Then followed by Marco Melandri in front of the two factory Yamaha boys. And as Derek put, it's not so much that the factory is doing bad, it's that GRT is doing good. Yep. Right, Derek? All right, that puts Leon Haslam in sixth because he had an early crash but had a good showing in the second race, followed by Cortese. Davies back there in eighth. Sykes in ninth. Laverty finishes out your top 10. And that covered it for the World Superbikes. We're going to be getting them again in just a few weeks' time in Thailand in March 15th and 17th. So we'll be looking forward to seeing them soon. But it's not like we're going to have a weekend without racing. And that's going to be GP coming up. But we did have a little bit of a preview of what's coming up this weekend, and we had some testing. It was Moto 3, Moto 2, and GP right out the track, Derek. And why don't we talk first? Let's go in the order that we normally talk the races. Let's talk a little Moto 3 testing. And everybody's favorite Italian, Romano Fanati, was out there leading it on combined times. How do you feel about that?
I love it. I kind of love it. I think Fanati, you know, learned his lesson very quickly last year. I think he has some unfinished business in Moto 3. He's back with the team that he did incredibly well on for two seasons, and I think he could really fight for the title this year, especially after seeing all the testing results. And I would love to see him do well. I think he really understands, you know, where he messed up. Hopefully, but it seems like he does. And he's competitive, and I love to see a competitive Fanati. He's a fighter. He makes things interesting, and yeah. He also in Moto 3, he has a much different riding style than all the other Moto 3 riders, and he makes it work. Takes these super wide lines, and I assume he's going to continue that because he hasn't been in the class for a year. But he makes it work, and it seems like the Honda's the most competitive package so far.
When it comes to Fanati, I'm kind of on the other side of the fence. I'm not really excited to see him back. I think he should have had a little more time off from the racing than just being suspended for really a year. I think that kind of shows a weak stance that GP took on this. It wasn't, you know, running people off the track. It was multiple offenses. He's been a bit of a hothead and caused issues, and you're going to go out there and grab somebody's break. And it's like, yeah, he may get the chance to prove himself that, like, he's going to go out there and do it. But if he loses his shit again and does something, then I think at that point, you got to hold the series to blame. If he goes out there and actually does something and hurts somebody, that's a serious fault at that point. You let a known issue come back again. That's kind of the risk you take. It's maybe they've sat him down and discussed with him, like, dude, you screw up just this much and you're
out.
I
can't imagine that they haven't had that kind of talk with him. And I think you're completely right. I think if he does cause something outright, you know, no ambiguity, if he really causes something, it's fully on Dorna. But until then, I'm excited to see him because I love watching him race, as long as it's not grabbing other people's brake levers. With that said, you know, I'm excited to see his name at the top. So we had Fanati lead the combined Moto 3 sessions. His teammate Tony Arbolino, who had really competitive rides last year. I think he won a couple races, if I remember correctly.
It's possible. If not, he was definitely on the podium.
Yeah, he was battling up there with Bezzecchi and Martin a bunch. But yeah, you have the two Snipers Hondas up top, and the first KTM is in third, pretty long way from the next KTM, and it's a Mr. Aaron Canet on a Max Biaggi Racing KTM.
Yeah, we're going to see where that goes, because Canet, you know, he's one of these guys that it's almost like he hit a wall, right? There's a few of them. Antonelli is another guy. McPhee can kind of be one of those guys where they've been very strong riders and been at the front, but there's been something, there's been a hole in their game. I think Canet's biggest thing is consistency, and he's been known to run a little hot too, right? He needs to have a strong year, and he can move up, I think. He's just got to find that consistency and maybe changing teams and getting some new management and working for somebody like Max can get him to get focused into the racing and not so much into the red mist.
Yeah, I think so. I think he could be super competitive, and it seems like, you know, a lot of the guys going into that Australia Galicia team with Emilia Alzamora at the head, some guys really gel with that structure, and other guys who we think are going to be the next thing, you know, Bastianini, Canet,
Quartararo,
like all those guys who we think, you know, we're going to be the next big thing, really just did not flourish in that team. So why I'm excited to see Canet on you know, he doesn't have any teammates. I think it's just him, right? And it's on a new project. So yeah, it should be good. Excited to see that. But yeah, there's a lot of other familiar names at the top of the timesheet. John McPhee was in sixth on the Petronas Honda, which was nice to see. Finally, seemingly having a fully competitive ride with a competitive team this year, which is exciting to see.
Yeah, and that's kind of the cool thing about Moto3, right? There are some names that are there, but it's definitely a bit of a shakeup season because you've got your proven rider, Infinati. I think, you know, he was someone that did move up to the next class. He's back. He's kind of like a Keenan Safagu almost, right? This is the guy that you have to beat. Testing has already proven that. Like, here is your bar. This is what you need to be at. But there's a whole bunch of guys that over the last 2 years that have left, talent just shifted, right? So now this is, if you've had maybe 1 or 2 years on and figuring getting your feet wet, this is probably a really good year to make a push towards the front because there's a lot of guys that have a lot of experience up front, but I'm not sure there's that Juan Mir, that, you know, Brad Binder, that one guy that everyone's looking at the championship right now. That guy's not here this year. It's anybody's up for
grabs. Yeah, if you think about it, the last 3 years with Danny Kent, Binder, and then Mir, you know, Moto3 has actually been a pretty runaway championship. As interesting as the races always are. Oh,
wait, time out. We have to edit that real quick because last year was great because that was Martin and Bezzecchi. So that was great between those two guys, and they moved up. So it hasn't been a runaway all the way.
That's true.
But it was good, yeah.
It's too fresh in my mind. But even then, like you said, the talent shifts. Like, besides Fanati, everyone else, like, can really make a break to be a top name in this championship. So that's exciting. And then you have the likes of, like, Anshu on the IO KTM.
He won the
last race last year. Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Also, Celestino Vietti, the new Sky VR46 rider, he had a podium in his second race last year, I think in Sepang. So, like, you know, a bunch of new talent coming in, a bunch of Red Bull rookies coming in, and, you know, a bunch of established names. I think it could be really, really interesting. But like you said, and rightfully corrected me, there's a lot more talent that headed up to Moto2, which yes, also probably looks to be one of the most interesting and exciting classes for so many reasons. The riders, the bikes, the teams, I'm pumped for it.
Dude, the talent in Moto2 is on a knife edge right now. If I went through the top 20, there's not a name you haven't heard of at the front of a race in the last, like, 3 years, just about. I mean, it is insane, the level that is here. And it's going to be, I think, like BSB, where the top 10 from one race, one weekend, they're going to be back in 15th, and some guy from 15th is going to be back up leading the race. Like, you get this mix of, man, I don't know who or what. I mean, there's probably a few guys that are going to start to pull away just from experience and talent, but there's also a lot of guys that don't have a lot of experience but a ton of talent that are going to be moving their way towards the front. I'm excited. Sam Lowes, who is no longer on the KTM, it didn't really work out with him in the KTM. He's back with the Federal Gresini team. He's going to be back on the Kalex. He was looking good. He led the combined times over the test, and so far, I think since he's been on that bike, he's never really been out of the top 10.
Yeah, I think Lowe's has really shown he's happy with the team. He's back with a team that he loves. He's back with a chassis manufacturer that he obviously loves. And I think what's interesting, both about Sam Lowe's leading the timesheet and doing really well this offseason, but then Tom Ludi is also right behind him in second on the testing times. Both former MotoGP riders, both know how to ride a larger bike. You know, you have a larger engine. You know, I think they probably have the riding style down for this bike a little bit more so than some of the other guys. But it seems like you can ride this bike multiple ways and still get the lap time. You can do the point and shoot, or you can carry the corner speed and you can still save the tire. It sounds like, obviously, we'll only know after a couple races.
And because we've got a new bike this year.
We do.
What is it?
765, I think.
765. Yeah, I think you're right.
Because the bigger battery. The other one was 675. So they switch it around, triumph in their triple and all that.
Don't quote us on us that, folks. It's just we know it's 700 plus cc's of triple action, which will make things not only look different but sound different too.
Oh, sounds so good.
Mm-hmm, it does. It sounds really good. And I forgot about that size of it, because when you had mentioned they'd been on the bigger bikes, and I was like, oh, that's right, because there's more power and these bikes are bigger, so they're probably, and obviously, you know, the cream will rise at the top, and their experience is definitely helping them out.
Yes, yeah, I definitely think so. You know, you look at you look down the timesheet, and there's not a lot off of, you know, first to 15th, you know?
No.
So obviously, no. Riding those bigger bikes probably helps, having that extra experience and time. You know, Tom Lutie's been in the intermediate class for a decade plus now. But, right. You know, obviously having experiences is going to help them out. But Buliga, 13th, less than a second off the top, you know?
Dude, you got to go all the way down to 20th before it's 1.3 seconds back. It's within a second. Fabio DiGiantonio, he's down there in 19th. He's still within a second of the leader. So that's 19 riders within a second already. And that's... You know, that's an NTS chassis, a KLX chassis, a KTM, a Speed Up, all in there as well. Riders from everywhere, past. We've got them coming back from MotoGP. We've got Moto2 staples that are switching teams, like Xavi Verhees now over at Mark VDS to team up with, you know, Alex Marquez. And, you know, Brad Binder is a new teammate in Jorge Mir team that's right on his heels right there. You know, Brad's 10th. Jorge's right there in 11th. You know, he's a rookie coming in already looking strong, followed by another rookie, like you had just mentioned, was Belega, was right there. Ah, man, it's already exciting. You know, GP's going to be excited, but this class is going to be something special this year.
Yeah, there are just so many riders, so many new riders, so many old riders. I'm looking forward to it. And the battle between Kalix and KTM, too, see if KTM can make that a bit more competitive. I was just looking through the test sheet, and something that actually really surprised me is that Marco Bezzecchi finished in 28th place. Mm-hmm. And then his teammate Philip Ertl in 29th on the KTM.
Yeah, the Tech 3 KTM, right?
Yeah, and it seems like I know the KTM was struggling a little bit, but That's a little bit concerning when you see Martin on the IO KTM, which is more or less the factory KTM, up in 11th. It's also just the Qatar test, so it could, you know, the circuit, the track, there's a lot that can go on. But anyway, and one other team, MV Agusta, have you seen the bike?
I've seen the bike. It looks good sitting still, which is a good thing, because it doesn't look good going fast, because it's not up there at all right now.
100%. But, oh man, am I excited. It looks great. I like their weird like tail section. That thing looks pretty cool. Hopefully they can become more competitive. They obviously have a huge mountain to climb, yes, as NTS found out last year. I don't really have any expectations for MV Agusta, but I'm glad to see another manufacturer in Moto 2, and it looks hella good.
And then for those of us keeping track, Joe Roberts, he is going to be on the American Racing KTM. I think Iker Lekwana is partnering up with him, if I'm not mistaken. And Joe was just right there in 24th, about a second and some change back. So getting there with that bike, but hopefully Joe, he was
Seemed like he was a little bit more competitive in Jerez. I think he was up in the teens. So
yeah.
Again, why preface the Marco Bezzecchi thing with it just being in Qatar? Maybe the KTMs are struggling a little bit more here than on a smaller circuit.
Yeah, and we're gonna, like I said, we've only got just a few days before we find out. But let's get on to the big dogs, MotoGP.
Big boys.
Yes, and a bit of a shakeup, I would say. Now, if there's ever a class that needs to be taken with a grain of salt, me and Jim couldn't help ourselves last time out, where we just started making all these wild predictions and talking out of our ass, which is what we do here on MotoPod, in case anybody doesn't know. We are not experts. We just love talking bikes. But testing is always kind of interesting. You'll see different names, but there was a bit of a shakeup because, you know, obviously Honda is going to be on the back foot. Lorenzo's still recovering from his wrist injury. You've got Marquez recovering from a shoulder injury, so they've got to spend some time on the bike. Cal Crutchlow still recovering from his ankle injury, so you're not really seeing the full potential, but what you will get to see is some improvements, and that definitely came from Yamaha, with Maverick Viñales leading the test. But just like Petrucci was talking about Sepang, Viñales looked good on used tires. Even Viñales, you know, he looks more comfortable with his race pace. I think if they were showing like everybody else was running, I think they were like 155s, 156, whatever that race pace was. And, you know, people could dip in there. Let's say there was 20 laps they were doing these sessions, and they were getting that one, that magical low lap for like 4 or 5 laps. Viñales was knocking out like 8 to 10 of those per race simulation. And that's when it's scary to other people.
Yeah. In Mavericks, he's shown this all through testing. And I think he's won winter testing.
Well, they came out the guns. I think 2017 was really strong. That's when
he won testing. Like the first like three or four races. Yeah, right?
And then the tire change came in, and that just screwed them all.
I more than anyone want to see Maverick Viñales do well. He changed to my number 12 this year. So rooting for him even more.
I'm glad he listened to you. You know, I know you wrote that letter, and you're like, "Listen, dude, I think you to get a little lucky. You got to switch it up to my number." I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, he took my advice. It's great. So obviously, I want him to do really well this year. You know, it's hard to get too excited knowing his track record of winter testing.
True.
And then Yamaha has a big way to go, especially in Maverick on a full fuel tank. That's what I'm interested in to see too, because he struggled with that a lot last year. He made terrible starts in the first. He lost the race in the first 5 laps.
Yeah, and then he would spend the next portion of the race setting the fastest lap for 5 laps in a row just to get up and catch up with 5th place.
Exactly, and then the tire was shot. I'm really interested to see that. I hope he has the same start he did a couple years ago. Can keep that momentum going. So Viñales was one to watch for, and then Rins as well. Rins's race pace was something else.
Yeah, he was fast out the gate at Qatar. And they just seem to stay right at the top for the most part.
Watching the interviews with him, he just seems quietly confident. You know, that kind of weird, goofy Alex Rins that you want to be friends with. And he just, both his demeanor and his riding, you know, with the lap analysis was really impressive. And I think he's going to really be competitive, not only in Qatar, but for the rest of the year if Suzuki can, you know, keep the development at the high level that they've been at. And it seems like they didn't get their engine wrong, which was their real issue the other year, because their engine is sealed this year, right? They're off concessions. Rins and Viñales are the winners of this test, if you want to put it like that.
Yep. And then a surprise name of Fabio Quartararo jumping up there. Now, remember, he's also on a year older bike than Viñales and his teammate Morbidelli and also Rossi.
I think he actually did get a 2019 bike. He's actually on the same speed. He's not going to have the same spec for the rest of the year, but he's going to start off with the 2019 package that all of them are starting on.
Oh, that's good. I guess, yeah, because they need, you know, that's more feedback for them to work with. That makes more sense, honestly, from, you know, not from a cost point, right? Because those bikes are now the 2010s, but from a development point, having more riders up there, and obviously he has now proven that he is a fast rider. And I definitely don't want to jump back on the bandwagon of like, here comes the Marquez killer that everyone thought he was going to be, but he's earned the right to have that seat now. Definitely through testing, you can see that he's made vast improvements over the time from Sepang to here. You give this guy a full season, who knows what he's going to do.
I agree with you on one hand, and on the other hand, I think it's the satellite Yamaha effect, right? Mm. Winter testing comes, they get the same bike as the factory bikes. The satellite guys are right up there. They're super fast. And then after 3-4 races, the factory guys get the upgrades that the satellite Yamahas don't get, and that's the last you see of the satellite Yamahas.
That was one of Herve Poncharello's sticking points with Yamaha, wasn't it? That's why he decided to go to KTM, because he couldn't get that support.
And ideally, Morbidelli will be getting that support this year. Quartararo, this is the bike he's on all year. So, and it's has the track record of being the easiest bike to jump on from being a rookie and to be competitive.
But, you know, if he starts doing well, they're going to throw parts his way.
Yeah, we'll see, because obviously that relationship between Petronas and Yamaha is slightly different than Tech 3 and Yamaha, because Petronas has an unlimited budget. So,
yes.
So yeah, we'll see. But that was an interesting name to see up at the top of the timesheets.
And then, you know, Marquez had a steady rate or a steady test. He needed to work on his shoulder, work on his bike. He kind of finished there in fourth. But I mean, honestly, that's with Mark taking it easy and finishing in fourth. So he's obviously going to be a threat as usual this year. Rossi stuck in a fast lap at the end. That fifth place is kind of a, it's kind of not the whole truth. He didn't have the greatest of tested guitars, spent most of his time meandering outside of the top 10, stuck in a fast one there at the end. He's not real thrilled with the bike. Shocker that, you know, everybody else in the Yamahas at Suburban don't mind it so much, but we're going to see what he can kind of do. Lorenzo, you know, got enough strength to throw in a fast one there, finished sixth for Morbidelli. Paul Espargaró, the only KTM anywhere near the top of the field, doing pretty good there in eighth in front of Taka Nakagami, who had a strong Sepang and still continuing with nice pace there in ninth, and Petrucci and in 10th place. And this pretty much is how this season is going to go. I'm going to go ahead and predict this. This is the Petrucci way. You're going to see those podiums. You might even see a win, and you're going to see a lot of 10th places out the guy, I think, just because he's so big and he's going to wear those tires out, man. This has been his whole career.
I don't think so.
Nah, you're going to disagree on that one, huh?
I'm going to disagree hard on that one. I think Petrucci is going to be really competitive. He's going to be in the top five, top six all year long. Definitely going to see some podiums, maybe a win. I don't think, obviously, the Ducatis, either they didn't throw in a tire or wasn't representative of their pace because, you know, the first couple days at Qatar, they were at the top all day. So, yeah, I'm not too worried about this. But I think Petrucci and Dovizioso are really going to be at the top of the field all year long. I hope that's the case. I hope Petrucci, you know, kind of overcomes those tire problems, both with his riding style and with the support of an entire factory behind him, kind of figuring out how to do that.
Man, have you seen how he looks? That guy is a skeleton right now. Holy
he looks
crap.
Like a twig.
He said he was going to lose 15 kilos last year, and I was like, how, dude? You already look gaunt. Found out how to do it. The only thing is you got to worry about then is when you start losing that much weight on that kind of frame, you start losing a lot of strength and endurance, too.
Skylar, I'm going to take your prediction of Petrucci and put it on Jack Miller. Maybe see some podiums. Probably not a win, but who knows? Jack has that win. If the conditions are right, who knows? But then 10th places. I think Jack could be that up and down competitor this year.
I wouldn't disagree
with
that.
That's what I'm going with.
It much like you, I'll take it whereas, like, you know, I want to see him up to the front much more. He's definitely one of the more exciting riders. But, you know, the package, of course, being on the junior team there, the Ducati, it's not a huge step back from the factory. But Jack's been there for a while, definitely has the experience. But it's going to be tough. And obviously, right, this is a very easy statement. It's tough to get in the top 10. Yeah, no shit. This is the best riders in the world. So a top 10 is nothing even to sneeze at, but I do hope for the best for Jack. Miller right there in 11th. He was followed by Juan Mir in 12th. Benyaya, who was wicked fast at Sepang, a little more back to reality there in 13th. But, you know, even so, he's still within a second of the leader. That's the other thing you got to mention. You know, Andre Dovizioso is in 15th. Right, we know Dovi's fast, and he's 0.9 back of the leader in 15th. That's it. Once again, just like Moto2, these test times are insane how close they are. And for the most part, they were all setting them just about on the same day. Dovizioso did it on day two, and, you know, Aleix Espargaró did it on day two. And then you had, I think, the only one was Alex Rins. Everybody else did it on day three. So you're kind of seeing what, you know, similar conditions, everyone's set in the same time. I want to play a sound for you. And I want you to guess what this is, okay?
Is it Andrea Iannone's Aprilia career?
Nope, that's Zarco on his career, joining on jumping on the KTM. Web bike is out the back, dude. And they've gotten, this is like they've actually lost ground this year almost.
Well, I hate to admit you're right on this. I do think Zarco made a mistake going to the factory KTM. I think he should have gone. He obviously had a contract for HRC last year. I'm sure all the other factories reached out to him besides Yamaha because they didn't have anywhere to put him. I think he made a big mistake. He's not a young kid, late 20s, early 30s at this point. Again, young person, old racer, especially in MotoGP. So I think he, unless KTM makes incredible strides this year, which I think, you know, I think they're going to make some strides because they have four bikes on the grid now. Their bajillion parts of testing, they can spread over four people plus two test riders instead of two people and one test rider. So I think they're going to make development, but yeah, he's not going to have a great season.
No. And that's just all the KTMs are back there. Outside of Paul Espargaró, who's the most experienced rider on that team, going up there in seventh, everybody was right back there. His rookie teammate, Oliveira, on the Tech 3. So it's a rookie team to KTM, a rookie rider. And then Hafiz Sarin, he was back there and, you know, bringing up the rear in 23rd. Even behind, you know, Bradley Smith on his, he was doing his testing duties for Aprilia. Little rich boy, Kyle Abraham, on the Desmond Dicci back there in 21st. Not, you know, pretty much what we kind of expect to be in the back there, but KTM has a lot of work to do, as does everybody, of course. You know, with testing, who knows what they're out there doing. They may just be doing components, getting things settled in, and then really not even putting the banker lap, low fuel, soft tires. You just never really know. But we're going to find out in just a few days, Derek, when we get out there. So you can always tell when the end of the show, I'm looking at the timer like, all right, it's an hour. It's enough jibber-jabber because it's going to start getting real loose here in a minute. But we've only got a few days left before we find out what's real and what isn't in the Qatar, and that is going to start on Thursday.
Yeah, I cannot wait. And, I think that about wraps it up, unless you got anything else you want to cover, Skyler.
Well, there is one more thing, Derek. We can't forget that Martin was out there getting us some great interview from the Qatar test. He was able to snag Hafiz Sarin, Miguel Oliveira, and Paul Espargaró, all, of course, on the KTMs for this year. Everybody, enjoy, and we'll be back to wrap up the end of the show.
Hi, it's Martin for Motopod, and with me is Red Bull KTM Tech 3 rider Hafiz Sarin. Hafiz, thank you so much for joining us again. We spoke to you when you started with Tech 3 a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
At the beginning of last year. Just missed out on Rookie of the Year last year, but you had a great season. Finished the season with two top tens. Looking back on it, how did you find your first year in MotoGP? Because remember speaking to you at the beginning of the year, because you'd come in as a substitute, and then there was, yeah, I'm going to get a ride. And you said you had to grasp the opportunity.
Yes, I was surprised that we can do a good race or maybe good season in last year. But some race, I was in the top 10, but we didn't finish yet the race. So this is a rookie mistake, you know. So I learned from this, and the rest is I try to improve myself also at the same time and try to use this opportunity in right way, you know.
Absolutely.
So at the end I didn't expect that I can make a good race sometime and also can give a challenge to some kind of experienced rider. And now is a second year with KTM. This is a new adventure, so I need to learn and also change my style to adapt this bike.
Sure.
So nothing special that more, but the interesting thing is we need to develop the bike to have a more strong bike to give to bring this bike on the top.
Yeah. I mean, riders often change manufacturers, but does it make it easier to have moved with the same team, the same management, the same crews, so there are familiar faces and you all learn together, or do you think sometimes it's an advantage to go to an established team just as a new rider?
No, I don't think so. It's better we move at the same team, just to the new manufacturer, you know. Because if I change to the new team, I need to adapt the team to understand the people again. And then now is Tech 3 team is for me is like my family and also good team. And there are many years with Yamaha. Normally people know. So
yeah.
The problem is also me and the team suddenly change to different manufacturer. And then the guys also need to learn how to adapt this bike to change some small things. So
yeah.
It's the same as me also. Now we start to work together to understand this bike, and we try to move forward a bit more faster. At the moment is we still learn step by step.
Sure.
So yeah, this is what for me, I prefer we stay with the same people and we move to different manufacturer. We learn together and we try to improve together. You know?
Fantastic. I mean, two things we all know about KTM is they win. They don't do anything without winning. KTM have always won when they go. So you know you're at a competitive manufacturer with a competitive backing, but they also have their DNA, you know, their way of doing things, and the steel trellis frame. Is it easier to adapt because you'll have ridden steel frames before?
For me, is KTM is the good, the good also manufacturer, and they are really big, and the guys that around our team and around me is really push hard to develop the bike, to try to make become more easier. It's like in the life, become more easy is better for you, you know. So arrive factory team and factory, now we are try to work together to help this bike try to improve, you know.
Sure.
Because they are just started 3 years in the world championship in MotoGP class. To compare with the rest of manufacturer, I think it's already more than 5 years for sure. And so now we just 3 years are, I think, not bad. For sure they are looking forward to improve many things.
Yeah.
And they are they have many kind of development to try. So for me it's good for me, because what we want, we let them know and they try to improve the bike.
Sure.
So this is what all the people want. So for me it's really fantastic.
Have you set yourself a target? I won't ask what it is. Do you have a target for the season? Or
my target is try to improve my target is I try to improve than myself than last year, you know? This is important, and this is also the first thing that my target to improve than my result last year.
Sure.
So then we try to work together with my teammate Oliveira and also the two factory rider, and try to make strong as much as possible.
It certainly seems that one of the attractions for Tech Toyota to move to KTM was that you will be two teams working together.
Yeah.
Not there's the factory team and there's the satellite team. So
no, this is different, because this is what I like, and also the team wanted to move, because is we get factory support. And so we work together. We try to bring this bike in the front. It's possible all the race we want. So and also the people is around KTM is the blood is like ready to race. You know, the trademark is also ready to race, and
yeah,
they want to win. And last year, the end of the season before the close the season, they make a good race, Moto3 first, Moto2 first, and MotoGP third, but in the rain. So for me is make the world, or maybe make the people of motorsport open the eyes that KTM is coming
and serious.
Yeah, yeah. And serious in the world championship, but they need time a bit,
yeah,
to develop the bike. So they arrive our team factory that a lot of experience, and try to give the experience to them, and also our feedback from the rider need to be good. And also we try to work hard every session or every test or every race, and let's see what we can do. So for sure they are, I think in few years or maybe in this year or maybe next year, for sure KTM arrive in the top group.
Yeah. Is there a particular race you're looking forward to this year? Obviously, Sepang would be the home
of
race.
Of course, Sepang. And
yeah,
I think Montmeló.
Yeah.
Catalonia. I'm looking forward to this. And many tracks that I like, because sometimes with Moto2, you don't like this circuit, but when you jump to MotoGP, suddenly you like.
Yeah.
And normally, last year, I liked so much. Only Assen circuit is a bit difficult for me.
Right.
But the race is really good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
We look forward very much to seeing your progress.
Thank you.
You've got four great riders in the team. You've got a very good team behind you. And certainly I, for one, are rooting for KTM to be pushing to the front. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Miguel. Just not only Portugal's first Grand Prix winner, but you're also the first rider to have taken the path from Moto3 to Moto2 and now MotoGP with KTM. How much easier do you feel the changes have been to the higher classes remaining inside the same family?
Well, I don't think any change is easy.
No.
And despite being on the same family, like the KTM family, my team actually changed. So, you know, it's a completely new adaptation to everything.
Sure.
Try to remember the names of everybody.
Yeah.
And try to know the people and the personality and the way to work. So in this fact, I think was as hard as anyone else who changes from Moto2 to MotoGP.
Sure. Your first impressions of the MotoGP bike from the first two tests and now, do you feel, is it more different than you expected? Is it the same? Are you finding you're adapting quite well?
Well, I got an half-day experience, let's say, in 2017 in July at Aragon. So more or less I knew what to expect. So now that obviously I mean the championship and, you know, need to go faster and everything, performance wise, obviously you start to notice some things that in half a day you don't expect. So yeah, it's going well. Bike is actually improving a lot. The team is doing a really good job, and I think we are investing our time in finding good directions with the setting of the bike, and I think it's gonna pay off in the near future.
It seemed at one stage this evening that times dropped off. Was the dampness appearing on the track, which has happened
before?
No,
I mean, we started quite with a lot of dirt on the track, so yeah. Obviously with the more rubber you have on the lines that you ride in, the better it gets the grip. So combined with the new tire and everything, the times will drop. And even tomorrow, we expect to go even faster, so we'll see.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, best of luck with the test, and we look forward to seeing you in 2 weeks. Thank you. So it's Martin from Motopod. I'm with Paul Espargaro, former Moto2 world champion and KTM Red Bull rider. Paul, first of all, huge congratulations on the podium at Valencia.
Thank you.
The first KTM MotoGP podium. The team's changed quite a lot. You've now got Danny Pedrosa coming as a second test rider. You now have Tectoire joining as a satellite team. But you're the continuity. You're going to be in your third year. Do you feel any extra pressure on your shoulders as leading the team?
Yeah, I mean, you have always extra pressure on the shoulders. Last 2 years, because we were new, and KTM, you know, KTM, it's a brand that doesn't like to be on the back. I mean, what they do to win, and is they marketing. They don't do marketing to sell beautiful bikes, even if they are. They do marketing to win races, and they sell that they are fast on the track. So, I mean, to be in KTM, you always feel the pressure that you need to push 100%, but you are right. This year we get two very fast riders on the team, Johan and Danny, and for sure they increase the level. Everyone is expecting much more than last 2 years on us, and we are trying to give. For sure, I'm the guy with more experience on the team, and trying to show them that still I'm fast, even if Johan is coming. But yeah, the pressure is high, that's for sure.
And top 10 again today. We have to remind ourselves it's only testing, but as fans we've been starved of bike racing for 4 months, so we try and read far too much into it. Do we look at those times? Do you tend to look at other riders' times? Do you look at other riders on other teams and think, yeah, I should be where he is, what's he doing different? Or is it really just developing the parts you brought for your bike?
I mean, you need to know the riders as well. There is a kind of riders that likes to work a lot, and maybe then they don't put the tire, the soft tire at the end to make the lap time, or they take, for example, Pedrosa was a guy who never was pushing for one lap. I mean, but he was working so much on the settings and on the bike, and at the end, the first race, the bike was perfect, even if he was not top on the test list.
Yeah.
But anyway, at the end, this is a kind of evaluation exam for all of us, for all the riders we are here. For sure, on the race, you have less time, 40 minutes, and then the first day is over. So you need to be fast, and maybe the first day is something important, you know, to see at the end of the day where you are, because it's more or less how it's going to be the race days, you know.
Yeah.
But for sure it's also a test, which the people is trying new bikes, new stuff, and and not everyone is pushing on the limit, even if I'm a rider which I like, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it depends of the rider, of the team, of what they are testing, and never you know what's going on, really, till the first race and the first practice.
And this might sound a daft question, but for someone who's never raced, you know, I've always been a fan, I ride a motorbike, but very slowly and carefully. We watched you guys do twice as many laps on a test day like today, and it was not a full day. As you said, we lost time at the beginning, lost time at the end. Yeah. You're doing twice as many laps as a race. How does it compare in how tiring it is? Sure, you're stopping and starting maybe and assessing, but you don't have the adrenaline of the race. How does it compare?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because sometimes you need to keep your speed and your fire, you know, up. Because when you do so many laps, it's so easy to fall in a comfort rhythm, you know, like not fast one. But you try so many things that you can get confused, and then you get like a comfort rhythm, which you don't get as much tired if you ride on the limit, and this is never good. So I always try to do small laps, you know, quality laps, not quantity, because then when you ride to the first, you know, race like here in Qatar, 40 minutes session, you just have runs of 3 laps. You need to do 3 laps, understand and take the info very fast, and then send to the team change fast the setting, and then go again for 3 more laps, and then with 3 runs is over. So you know, as soon you can keep on the test this speed, it's good. But on the other hand, you need to make long runs because the race is you need to test how good is the bike after 10 laps. So, you know, it's a kind of compromise. It's not easy, but you need to control it as better you can to be fit for the first race,
Do you sometimes look for somebody going out and think, okay, I'm going to chase him, and it almost has that competitiveness?
Yeah, it's always important to ride alone, because alone is where normally you are on the race. But, you know, to know where is the limit of the bike is try to catch fast riders. You know, because when you are riding alone, you think it's limiting the bike, but maybe you are doing wrong lines, or you are pushing so much on the brakes or whatever. So by going behind some riders, you see where you are weak and where your bike is weak. So it's easier to improve and easier to do the mistakes or what is not working on.
Sure.
So yeah, it's also important on the test to follow some guys, especially fast guys like, you know, Hondas, Suzuki's that working good, Yamaha's, Ducati's,
It's been a long day. I don't want to keep you any longer, but one thing that you and Alesha are unique with is you have a brother in the paddock riding for a rival team.
Yeah.
How does that work? Because, you know, brothers are always competitive.
Yeah.
And racers are ultra competitive. So are you still, is there an extra spice to beating Alesha, or do you want to see him do well because he's your brother?
I mean, for sure he's your brother, and I have to say I don't like to have my brother here racing against me, you know? But it's something that it can happen, and I think we need to be a little bit smart and check it from a little bit, you know, on the top of us, you know?
Yeah.
And we need to be proud of what we are doing. You know, 2 brothers in 2 factories in the top class of road motorcycle. And it's amazing. So in a kind of way, we suffer when we are racing against each other. We enjoy it when we are home looking races. And the most important is that we need to know that we are racing for different companies, different manufacturers. So we need to keep, you know, our relationship really alive.
Yeah.
Because we are brothers and we love so much each other and we like so much to hang out together. But we need to keep what is happening here in the pit box, in the racetrack, you know. We cannot talk so much about bikes, about settings, about tires, about, you know, because it's kind of disrespect to our brands, you know. So we try to talk about motorbikes, but not going deeply in.
Not specific.
Exactly, no specific.
Yeah.
But at the end, it's nice because we share the same life. We know how each other feels perfectly because we are sharing, you know, completely life together, training at home. And it's nice because we push each other on the limit when we train at home.
Yeah.
And also when we see each other on the track. So I think this relation have made Alesha made me better, and I have made better Alesha. So I think this relation is a reason why we are here racing.
I'm sure our listeners will correct me if I'm wrong, but I can't think of any brothers that have been in MotoGP or Premier class before.
Yeah, they've been the Hayden brothers.
Oh, of course, Rosalie, yeah.
But not in a full year.
No.
Just some races. Nicky was in the full year, but I think Roger was not.
Wild-carded.
Yeah, wild-carded in Laguna Seca, you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and something like that.
Well remembered, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But not two brothers racing in the World Championship MotoGP for full season, and for sure not in the factory team like we are.
It's you've been in MotoGP, this is your sixth season.
I've been three, and this is going to be my sixth season, yes.
Yeah, and amazing. 14th in world level, isn't it? I think 2002.
I don't want to remember that. It's on a lot.
It's incredible because you're so young.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, we start the World Championship with 15 years old, so I'm 27 now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a lot. It's been a while, but, you know, it's good to have good people around you to keep this spirit alive, because to get bored of this wall or tired, it's so easy. It's so demanding. It's so psychically demanding.
Yeah.
And physically as well with the injuries. So you need to have good people around, and that's why the relationship with my brother makes us continue battling and fighting and training together and improving ourselves.
No one wants to be the first to retire.
Exactly,
eh?
Exactly. Even if my brother is older, so he should be the first one.
He should go first. Your parents must be very, very proud and probably a bit nervous as well.
They are for sure. I mean, my mother more than my father, because my father was a crazy guy when we were young, but at the end, they are also super proud to see the two brothers and two sons, racing together.
I remember talking to the Lowe's parents, and I said, "Do you want him to win, or you just want him to be safe?" Dad said, "I want him to win."
Yeah.
Mum said, "I just want him to be safe." Both of them.
This is always the same. You know, Mum always wants you safe, and Dad is the one who's giving you the passion and the throttle vibes. You know, to be cool always.
Fantastic to see you looking so fit and healthy and happy, and the team seem really happy and positive. Yeah. All the best, very, very thank best for the season. Look forward
much.
To seeing you around.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed, Paul.
Thank you.
Don't forget, you can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. If Facebook is your deal, you can find us. We have a group there. It's called facebook.com/motopod. That is the Motopod fan page. You can get over there. We do a lot of updates. You know, I'll drop to see if we get some questions going over there, get interacting with a lot of people. Our very own Scott Bolton, I almost forgot to mention this. He went out and got us a discount with Moto America. So, folks, if you are headed out to the Moto America races at Road Atlanta, which are coming up here in just a few weeks' time, go over to our Facebook page. Once again, that's facebook.com/motopod. We have a link there. It'll get you about 10 or 15% off there on your tickets for the race weekend. So go ahead and think that. Go ahead and jump on Twitter and hit up Scott Bolton and give him some love. He's at MotoDog650. Make sure you show him, hey, you know, some appreciation. He went out there and did that on his own accord, you know, and he's always handling it here for the show. So thank you, Scott, especially for me, and I'm sure Derek really appreciates that as well. Speaking of Twitter, you can find the MotoPod show, and we are at Moto_pod. You can follow us there pretty much for a lot of the similar things like you do on Facebook, news and any announcement, and just some banter. You can follow me personally, and I'll chat up with you. I'm at SkylarV20 on both Twitter and Instagram. Derek, where can people find you?
People can find me at MotoDerekC, again, both on Twitter and Instagram.
Excellent. Our other host, Andrew, you can find him at Andy_course. Jim is at MotoRGV on both Twitter and Instagram. Dave Neal, he's on Twitter at Dave Neal. Instagram, it's a little bit different. It's at the Dave Neal. And if he keeps up all this great Motopod, it's going to be at Sir Dave Neal eventually, I'm pretty sure. I think it's time for us to get the hell out of here, Derek.
Sounds good to me, Skyler.
All right, everybody. Enjoy the races. Zoom, zoom.